Hello and welcome to another episode of Monday Mile, your walk and talk podcast, your source of all things moving motivation. Today's guest is a very special one. Not only is he a rad dad, he's a marathon man and probably one of the fittest men to grace our television screens. Good morning, Britain, Tipping Point, Ninja Warrior, Ben Shepherd.
Aww.
Welcome to Monday Mile.
Thank you, Amy. What a lovely introduction.
How are you?
I'm good. I could do with that sort of introduction every time I wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
That'd be lovely.
Imagine, on
GMB. How's your 3 o'clock alarm call? Would you make that up for me?
You had an early start today, didn't
you? Yeah, yeah. It's been a long old day.
What time did that alarm set?
It goes off around 3-ish, 3, 3.30, something like that. It depends.
Casual. Middle of the night. Some people are still out.
Although,
on dance floors at that time.
Yeah. And when I used to live in North London,
yeah,
a long, long time ago, I used to drive past, at least used to live not far from King's Cross, I used to drive past the Cross, which is, you're probably too young to know, the Cross was a really big...
Yeah, I am saying no way, I actually don't even know what that is.
The Cross was a really, it was next to Bagley, so the Cross.
Yeah.
Have you heard of the Church?
No.
Church was a very famous drinking establishment. on a Sunday, everyone would go to the Church, lots of New Zealanders, Kiwis and Australians would go down there. But Bagley's in the Cross, you'd go past at about 3.30 in the morning.
Just warming up.
And honestly, that would be the only reason I'd think, I'm glad I went to bed early last night. You'd see all these people coming out.
You're
just,
like,
you know, they just have had an amazing night.
But you're like, I'm not that man and I'm going to feel fresh until about 4 o'clock
when
the coffee runs out.
And I'll fall off a cliff.
So I was first introduced to you at my maiden debut of Ninja Warrior. Didn't quite go my way.
High hopes I had for you, Amy. I'm going to be honest. I bigged you up massively to Cammy, by the way. I was very excited. I said, we've got an Olympian, snowboarder. What more do you need? She's going to be agile. She's going to have strong glutes, strong quads. She's going to be amazing with the jumping. She's going to be fantastic on the grip strength. And what happened?
I'm sorry, but it couldn't have gone worse. My biggest fear was going out on those, is it called the steps?
Yeah.
And literally, I think I went out on the fourth step and it was as if, I think my right leg literally just didn't work. It was horrendous, but we've left that behind and here we are.
I was watching it the other day, actually. Did you break a rib? You jumped and then landed. You didn't even try and put your feet in the right place.
Chest butted one of the stones and then
you looked in agony.
Yeah, it wasn't
and then
great.
You're in the water as well and you've got to try and climb out and
you can't
breathe.
Climb out, but I did that very quickly.
If it makes you feel any better, we had a gladiator, an old gladiator, Shadow, who was one of the gladiators, came on and did Ninja Warrior, and he fell off the steps and he dislocated his shoulder. And he's
brutal.
In really good nick, Shadow. He's a fireman now. Really still ripped like a gladiator, as you'd expect a gladiator to be. And he dislocated his shoulder. So, you know, it wasn't just Olympic greats that fell as well. Gladiators fell at that stage. So you know.
Okay. Well, we've moved on from that. We've parked that. But one day I will come back for redemption. But taking it right back to the start for you, how did you get into TV presenting?
So I was at university in Birmingham. And I... was doing a degree in dance and theatre arts. So I was training to be a dancer.
What? That's kind very of random.
Yeah, it was. It was brilliant. It was me and 16
girls. Are
you a good
dancer?
No, awful.
Me too.
I had three brilliant years, though, trying to learn to be a better dancer. Me and 16 girls in leotard and tights every day.
That sounds like the dream.
It was. There was a meeting of the rugby team and the dance department for 3 years that would make a sensational reality TV show. Let me tell you that. But I was there and there was a casting that was put up on the drama department wall and I went along to this casting. It was for something to do with a local weather company that made the regional weather.
Yeah.
Started working for them and then I started doing all sorts of things like answering the phone, painting walls, being a runner.
Oh, no way.
All sorts of bits and pieces. And then it was one of the directors there, a woman called Michelle Ann Carter, who said, Ben, I think you should try and be a TV presenter. I think you'd be pretty good. And I said, really? So every now and again, they'd let me do the weather, have a little go, present the travel. And kind of what I did was I got a show reel together, which is a bit like a CV on tape.
Yep.
I applied for a job that I saw on the stage. I didn't get that job, but I met Andy Peters,
Oh, yeah.
Who's a very good friend of mine now. And Andy then took me to Channel 4 and I launched T4.
Unreal.
And that was about 1999.
What a turnaround from dancing in a leotard.
Yes! To messing about on telly.
Yeah, that is brilliant. Do you have any television role models as you were getting into it? Is there anyone that you looked up to that inspired you to follow in their footsteps?
Well, I mean, I'm sort of, you know, finding your path in any of those sort of worlds. Andy was a fantastic mentor and still is now to this day.
Yeah.
Because he'd achieved so much.
I've seen him
as
in
we
the
were growing up. Yeah. and he's a mentor there as well, isn't he? It's awesome.
Yeah.
Always, you know, huge fan of Andy. And then I watched a lot of sport. Chris Evans was a really, really big hero of mine as well. I used to love watching Chris Evans because what Chris, I think, does and has always done is just brought so much passion and enthusiasm to anything he presents. Like, it doesn't matter whether he's presenting a cookery book or he's presenting a Formula One race, he will approach it with the same zeal and enthusiasm, and that's so infectious. And I always, always loved watching him. And then I loved all the interview shows. So Parkinson back then was huge.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved Parky. And watching how he did it and deconstruct his interviews.
Love that word, deconstruct.
Yeah, well, I try and deconstruct it, just try and understand how he got so much out of the people. Those interviews that he did, and we don't have many interview shows like that anymore, where it's all about the answers. A lot of the interview shows are fantastic and entertaining, but it's often about the questions. It's about it's about the host.
Yeah.
You know, they're the big characters.
And so, tapping into the individual and making them feel comfortable in that environment.
And I think those watching people like them, I was, and any sports broadcaster as well.
So let's get into sport.
Yeah.
Because I know you're a big fan of
Des Lynam was my absolute, I mean, Des Lynam, not least because he had a stunning moustache, but Des Lynam was an absolute hero of mine. Just the way he was a professional and across all the sports. And I just live for sport, Amy, as well.
I mean, your marathon time is seriously impressive. 3 hours, 21 minutes.
Yeah, it was supposed to be, it's supposed to be better.
I'm sorry, but that's still like, that is ridiculous.
The wheels
fell off. For someone that their profession isn't sport.
No.
But you've had a little dabble in sports broadcast, London 2012.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Tell us about that and that experience as a sports fan. Witnessing history unfold in front of your very eyes. In the stadium.
The best job I will ever have.
Oh, that's so cool.
The best job I will ever have. An absolute privilege. Even to this day, the team of us that made that broadcast still get together and pinch ourselves all these years later, sort of 9 years later, and talk about how special it was. So I was hosting just the stadium. So this wasn't broadcast on telly. One of the problems that they had or they were nervous about was how many people would be in the stadium, and when the stadium emptied at the end of the athletics, they'd all go and charge to the stations and the stations would get clogged up. So they decided they wanted to do some broadcast in the stadium with some guests to try and keep people there, to keep them interested.
Yeah, because the roads would be like insane otherwise, right?
So, and a very good friend of mine was producing it, James Longman, who now produces The Late Late Show for James Corden.
No way.
In the States, yeah. He's not done bad, has he?
No, he's good.
But a lot of friends got together and they said, Ben, you got a couple of weeks to spare in the summer.
Do you fancy watching a bit of sport?
Do you fancy coming down, being in the stadium? And I was there every night for the athletics, every single night. And it was just the most extraordinary. For those 2 weeks, and the Olympics went on longer, but for those 2 weeks, London and London 2012 and that stadium, Stratford, was the centre of the world. You know, in terms of what everyone was talking about.
So magic.
Everything came together. Our athletes were extraordinary. The crowds from the minute go, every single session, and not just for the Olympics, but the Paralympics, well, every session, morning and evening, sold out because the fans were so passionate about it. Honestly, Amy, to watch what happened, to see Usain Bolt win, Mo Farah, Super Saturday, then Super Duper Saturday, to see that happen and be there, it's the sort of stuff that I'll tell my grandkids about.
Getting a ticket, it was
impossible.
I remember watching it from, I was in New Zealand training for my first Olympics, which was crazy. And obviously seeing it unfold was so inspiring. And it's like, I want a piece of that action.
Yeah.
So cool. Tell us a little bit about the famous photo. I love this story. Is it the Mo Bolt and the Lightning Bolt? Because there's probably not many people know the backstory to that. And that's, I think, very interesting in terms of how you talk about making people feel comfortable. You smashed it.
Well, you know, it was just a moment in time. So it was the last session, the last race. Mo had just been awarded the last medal of all the Olympics. So everything was quiet and closing down. And I've got my producer in my ear. My producer's saying, OK, we're going to have to wrap it up. But then all of a sudden, I'm interviewing Mo and his partner and his daughter, his stepdaughter, by the side of the track. And we're chatting away. And then James, who's now in James Corden's ear, but James goes, Usain's out the back and he wants to come out, but security is saying, we can't get him out, everyone will go crazy. If you say something to the crowd, and there was probably about 50,000 people still in there, 30,000,
50,000. 50,000, small
idiots. It was about 80, 90,000 people, wasn't it? So there were few had gone, it was emptying out. Yeah. Then they might come out. So I said, right, we've got one very special guest. Would you like Usain to... And everyone goes crazy, so I go, let's get Usain out. And Usain comes out, and Usain and Mo were good mates. I think they share the same management. Okay. And we had, and I've got this photo of me interviewing, like, the two icons of London 2012, really. Usain with what he did, and Mo with what he had managed to achieve. You know, absolute heroes for the British athletics and sort of the country. And we're chatting away, and I said, look, okay, we're going to have to let everyone go. Before you go, we can't leave you without, and the photographers, everyone, without taking a picture. So I took them over to where the podium was, and they're really strict at the Olympics about who stands on the podium. Just, you will know, right?
You're saying casual.
But you like, can't, hey, you can't stand on the podium if you've not won a medal. Like, I couldn't stand on, they're really, really strict.
I didn't know that, actually. Yeah, there you go.
You're not allowed. If you're just an average Joe there, whatever, you're not supposed to anyway.
Yeah.
I don't think it stopped Chris Moore standing on it, but that's more.
Of course it did.
Anyway, so I said, right, Mo, Usain, get together, give the world what they want, give them one last image of the Olympics and London 2012. And it was at that point that Mo stood there and did the lightning bolt, and Usain stood there and did the Mobot, and that image went global. I mean, it's still sort of an iconic image to this day. And
you
were
the mastermind behind that.
Yeah, I'm not sure it was a mastermind, but it's one of those things. It's one of those serendipitous moments, isn't it?
Yeah.
It just so happened that he was there, he wanted to come out. They were great mates, and we just made this magical moment happen. And to be part of it, Ames, was just, still to this day, I look at pictures regularly and pinch myself.
Yeah, that is seriously, seriously.
Yeah.
I would love that. So epic.
If I could go back at any time in my career or my life, it would be then, just to go back and relive one of those occasions again, just to watch it all unfold.
So delving into your routine, you've got a pretty intense job when it comes to early starts. You know, you wear multiple hats. Rad dad. Marathon man. And as well as, of course, all of your broadcast work. How do you balance it all? You know, of course, driving back and forward to Bristol.
Yeah, we filmed Tipping Point down in Bristol. So that's sort of, it's a bit smoke and mirrors, really.
Yeah, okay.
It's a very heavy schedule for some parts of the year. So we film 175 episodes of Tipping Point in one series. So we do that in a big block.
That's super intensive.
Yeah. So we'll do that from February through till March through till July, let's say. And then things calm down a little bit from then, but we're still doing the breakfast. I think, how do I fit it all in? Somebody runs my diary very carefully, and I have a very understanding wife, I would say.
Amazing.
At times, I'm not really sure where I am. But do you know what? I get to do a job that I absolutely love. And you get to do a job you love, you never work a day in your life, right?
Exactly. That's what I'm aiming for. That's what I'm rolling for.
Yeah.
Keep the dream alive.
Too right.
And keep it going.
You know, what could be better than sharing people's stories, finding out about people, exploring people's adventures and helping them sort of share that with other, you know, other like-minded people, whether that's on a quiz show or a big game show like Ninja Warrior, physical game show, or on breakfast television.
So cool. Let's get into your running and your fitness regime, because you are uber fit and you've achieved some amazing feats physically. How have you found the time to fit the training in with that super intensive work schedule? What's the shepherd's secret?
There's not much of a secret. I have always loved running and training and exercise. I love team sports, love any sort of sport. And what I find now is, I think, you know, the reason I can cope with very little sleep or the reason I can cope with heavy schedules is because I keep myself fit. And it's the discipline of that that keeps my mental balance where it needs to be. No question. And if I let it go and I'm not disciplined, and it starts to unravel, it starts to deteriorate, yep, and I start struggling. And I can't afford that to happen, because if the best of me is when I'm at work, then that's not fair on Annie and my two kids. So I need to make sure that I can enjoy being with them and they get some of me that's not just a grumpy old bugger.
Who's
knackered.
Exhausted and knackered.
Yeah.
Do your boys inspire you stay in shape? Do they give you a run for your money?
They do now. So my eldest is Sam, is 15. He's very nearly 16. And he's 6'2", so he's bigger than me now. When he was born, the proudest day of your life, where your first child comes along. When he was born, the midwife looked at me. He's a really long baby, really tall. Long. You don't get tall babies. And she looked at me and said, and she just looked at the baby and looked at me and then went, "Oh, his uncle's tall." I'm like, "You're getting grief from the midwife for being short on the day of a son." I said to her, "This is the proudest day of my life. You can't heckle me for being short."
But you're not actually that short.
Yes, that's what I think.
You're 6 foot.
Oh, at least six. No.
5'9".
What?
No, I'm kidding.
So anyway, so Sam is, and you know, we've grown up running around, playing football, playing cricket, playing rugby. But Sam, in the first lockdown, really got into running. One of his really good friends is a really great runner. And Sam didn't run before that. And he's fallen in love with running. The advent of Strava and running and now training. And we used to run around the park and we'd do park run together. And a few months ago, for the first time, going up the hill at the end, and I'm going, "Come on, Sam, we're nearly there." He just slapped my ass and said, "Come on, old man, keep up," and ran off. And my jaw dropped. And I'm like,
how did that happen?
So exactly how, when, and all I could think was, the little so-and-so, I'm going to kill him. Oh my God, I'm so proud. I'm so proud of how fit he's become.
Oh, that's so cool.
How enthusiastic it is about what he's doing. And how special it was to see him just embracing that. And what I know now at 15, and he's really taken to it, that being physically fit and healthy is going to be a hugely important part of his life. It's going to be part of his routine forever.
Oh, massive.
Because it's into him. And with Jack, you know, Jack's much more into team sports. Sam's found his sport, which is athletics and running and triathlons, that sort of stuff. Jack is team sports all the time, and it's great being able to bowl cricket balls at him or whack footballs at him or play golf. We all play golf together.
Oh, cool.
And there is, honestly,
golf's a struggle.
Yeah, on that mental
really
struggle.
It's a really mental, challenging game.
Brutal. Toughest, I think. Yeah. Because you can hit a beautiful shot and then absolutely horrific shot and not really understand why.
Yeah, the minute for me it's 1 in 5, so I've got a bit of work to do.
I'd say that's not bad odds, to be fair.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really know what I'm dicing with, though. It's just turn
you'll
up
get there.
And give
but
it a go.
That one is always makes the other four.
And it sails into the distance. That's a good feeling. You played in Soccer Aid.
I have.
What's that like? Playing for England?
Do you know, as a kid that grew up wanting to be a professional sportsman, and it didn't matter what sport it was. Like, if I could have done anything, it would have been to be a professional sportsman. Unfortunately, I didn't have the skill, the ability, or the size, or any of the attributes you actually need to be able to...
I find that really hard to believe, though. For considering physically what you have accomplished, how many marathons you've done,
So here's the difference, though. And as a professional sports person yourself, there is a huge difference between being a passionate amateur and a professional. I mean, and the disparity is far greater than,
in something like running, it is. It's
well,
night
running
and day.
Or rugby or football or cricket or any of those things. Like, you can be a good club player, and that means you'll get nowhere near when it comes to sort of the professional sport. So in my head, that's what I always wanted to do. Never got near it, but loved my sport anyway. So the chance to do Soccer Aid, whereby, you know, 20 odd Muppets that work on television or music or acting or whatever get to pretend to be footballers and treated like footballers for 4 or 5 days and then play in front of 75,000 people at Old Trafford.
Yeah, that's wild.
It's crazy. It's the most visceral experience I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
Walking out of the game, playing the game, and then taking a penalty, because it's gone to penalties a few times.
Yeah.
So I've had to stand in front of a crowd. And I'm a TV presenter. I'm not a footballer. So obviously, I'm going to take permanently like a TV presenter, not a footballer, but it doesn't stop you feeling every single person at that stadium and scoring. That moment is a rush like no other.
Yeah, that is cool.
It's just, and then you know, 1 minute you're playing against Zidane, or you're playing against Maradona, or
casual.
You're playing against Figo, you're playing against my absolute hero, Paolo Di Canio, or Gianfranco Sola. I have a few things that I've kept over the years, but my Soccerade pictures and my friends from Soccerade that I've made, the sort of fellow players, are the ones that I cherish the most.
Very cool. I'd like to do that one day.
Oh, man.
Need to get practicing.
Yeah.
Started playing five-a-side, actually.
Nice. Yeah. How's it going?
It's good. It's nice because it's just something that's so different.
I'm playing five-a-side tonight, actually.
Are you?
Yeah.
Unreal.
I'll be struggling in the morning, though. 46.
And you've been up since 3:30. Yeah. Absolutely brutal. So with your broadcast work, you've got quite a clear sort of division, as in the majority of work that we see you do at GMB, Tipping Point, it's not necessarily that sporty. Do you like to keep the two passions, your sport and your broadcast life, separate? Or is that just kind
no,
of the way it's...
it's just how it's gone.
Rolled?
I mean, I left GMTV in 2010, and then I went and worked at Sky Sports for 4 or 5 years, and I did the Champions League, and I did the League Cup, and I did Goals on Sunday with Cammy, and that was an absolute gift of a show to work with somebody who's become one of my best friends now, and we got to work together on Ninja, as you know,
and to
learn and be around that environment of professional managers and footballers coming in and talking about everything that I'd be talking about anyway. Do you know what I mean? In the pub with my mates. But I was actually talking about it with the people that do it and do it for a living. You know, that was just an absolute dream. So I enjoyed that. And then the opportunity comes your way and you sort of move in a slightly different direction.
Yeah.
Went back to the breakfast at ITV, started doing this show. We actually started Tipping Point the year of the Olympics.
Oh,
and here we are nearly 10 years later.
Still going.
And we're still doing it.
So, sailing back between London and Bristol.
I think it's quite hard, as much as you'd like to, if you work in broadcasting, you'd like to chart a path of where you want to go. You can sort of have a goal of where you want to go, but you never know what's going to happen or what's coming around the corner.
It kind of sets it for you, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you've just got to be able to embrace the challenge and feel like, is this something I really want to do? And I've always been very good at saying yes.
Yeah.
My wife will drive, you know, she will attest to the fact that I don't say no enough, because I just love doing the job that I do and getting the opportunity to do it and embracing those adventures, because who knows what you might learn, what you might meet.
Yeah, the people you meet on jobs, that's what excites me. So on this podcast, we like to ask our guests about their relationship with the start of the week, Monday, it being Monday Mile. Do you have a very sort of clear-cut end-to-end week? You know, it's like, yes, weekends, or is Monday like any other day for you?
I, at the moment, because it's heavy schedule, the only days off I have are Saturday and Sunday. So the weekend is absolutely sacrosanct right now.
Yeah.
When I'm not heavy into Tipping Point, I used to work on Sundays for 9 years. I worked every Sunday as well. So often I'd be doing 6 days a week. So it didn't really matter. Monday would be a day off. There's a hangover from school, I guess.
Yeah.
Which I think tortures all of us, that Monday was the start of the week, and that feels a little bit like, oh, we've got so many days to get through. But very quickly, I think if I can attack the day, get up early, get in there, get going, once I'm up and running, I'm usually all right.
Love it.
Yeah, usually. And I always feel better if I've done something positive at the start of the week. So make the start of the week a positive start, and the rest of the week sails by.
It does sail, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So exercise-wise, is there like a structure as to how you would fit that in a week so you stay feeling mentally sane and on top of your game?
Okay, so I can run you through this week, for example.
Yeah,
so I've been down in Bristol. So Tuesday, so I had 4 shows Monday, 4 shows Tuesday. I had a very intensive racquetball game with my new friend Jim down in Bristol.
Love that.
I'm not very good at racquetball, but it's an amazing sport. Wednesday morning, got up, went to the gym, trained in the gym on Wednesday morning, came home, did 3 shows, came home. Thursday morning, got up, did this, did a session with my trainer Steve on a Thursday morning. I'm playing five-a-side tonight. Friday I'll do breakfast show, and then I've got a very intense game of golf tomorrow afternoon. And then Saturday and Sunday I will sleep, and then we'll start again on Monday.
So it's a priority.
Yeah, it has to be, Amy. It's such an important part of who I am and in my DNA. And when I get, oh God, worst thing in the world is an injury.
Oh, it's the worst.
I fell off a salmon ladder a few years ago. I dislocated my and broke. I broke the inside of my elbow.
Sorry, what? A salmon ladder?
So you know Ninja Warrior, the salmon ladder is when you do a pull-up and then you pull the bar and you lift it up a latch.
I didn't get to experience that because I fell off at the start. The steps, you've completed the course yourself.
Yeah.
How many times?
I got up the wall a couple of times.
Oh, a couple of times.
Got up the wall a couple
so
of times.
So casual, like it's to, all right,
don't
worry.
Don't like to talk about it. I fell off a salmon ladder, dislocated my arm on one side and broke it the other. But just got on with it and went to work for a couple of weeks. And then one of the cameramen said, Ben, you've really hurt yourself. You've got to go and get it checked out. And it was really bad. And I couldn't do anything for months. And it was crazy. I was awful to be around, just because I just need to expend that energy.
That energy, yeah, I totally.
Because it allows
totally
once I've expended that energy, I can focus, and I'm very easily distracted. So yeah. I need to get that out. It's like having two boys. Having two boys is like having a dog. They're like having dogs. You just got to run them. You've got to get the energy out so they can sit down and focus on what they need to do. And that hasn't changed. I'm 46 years old and I learned by now.
That is amazing, though. Yeah. Embrace it. And a last little thing. Have you got any little takeaways or nuggets that you can share with people that may be struggling for motivation to help them get up, get out and get after it?
So when I've really needed to, because I know that I'm tired out, there's a couple of things that I will do. Firstly, I will get my kit ready and my kit will be by the door. And I don't give myself an excuse. Don't allow yourself time to think about it. You get up, the kit goes on, and you go out the door.
It's straight there, literally. In, yeah.
I have a friend that actually sleeps in their kit sometimes, just so they've got literally no excuse because they go up first thing.
That is next level. I've done the step into it, lay
just
it out
it there.
On the floor, but I've not done the sleeping.
So the sleeping
that's
in the kit
that's
was
a good one.
The other thing is get somebody to go with you because you never want to let someone down. It's always easier when there's somebody there. So if you're thinking about doing something, find someone to train with. It's so much easier.
9 a.m. park run.
Yes,
see you there.
Totally. Because if you set the date, you can't let them down. You don't want to let them down. And I'm all about not letting them down.
Yeah, that's a really nice one as well.
There is no question, and I'm sure lots of the people you've spoken to have said this, you never, ever regret a workout. But
no, you
can regret not going.
You massively regret not going.
And I think that's a little moral that sits in my head and plays occasionally when I'm sitting there and as you know, as I've explained and bored you, I love exercise, I love doing it, but I still go through, oh, can I really be bothered? Do I really want, but I will never ever regret it. And I know that if I don't go, later on that evening I'll be going, why did I go? I'll be really annoyed. So you never regret a workout.
No, you don't.
No matter how small. Even if it's a little brisk walk or even it's a little jog, it doesn't have to be a mammoth cardio session or
I think chunking it down and making it accessible, because sometimes we set ourselves these wild goals.
Totally.
I'm gonna run around the whole of Richmond Park, where actually that might make it unaccessible for that day. So just going out with an open mind and giving yourself the time and space to unleash, even if it's 20 minutes is better than no minutes.
I'm so with you.
That's my theory. Ben Shepherd, I think you've got a five-a-side game to get to.
I do, yes. I do. I feel like I've had a warm-up, though.
Yeah,
this is
at least
great.
We've warmed up a little bit.
Ready to go.
Have you ever done
We're short. Do you fancy a kickabout? Are you up for it?
What, in these high-heeled trainers?
Come on, why not?
You know what?
It's a bunch of very slow, fat, middle-aged men. You'll be absolutely
really?
Fine.
I've actually started playing with 10 men.
It doesn't surprise me, and I'm sure you're holding your own.
I'm holding four. And tomorrow night, actually, I'm hosting a little five-a-side game for the girls.
Nice.
Which will be really cool. Monday Mile listeners, it is a wrap. A massive thank you to each and every one of you for coming back week after week and tuning in. You know what? This is the end of season one. Who would have thought it? 10 episodes back to back. We're dropping in hot next week, season two. And we've got something very exciting up our sleeves. The big O is approaching fast, and so is season two. So hit that subscribe button and make sure you're ready to tune in. Have an absolutely wicked week.